You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave following what may have been the finest Packer game, certainly of this season, but maybe of the past couple of seasons. Packers just really lighting up the Seattle Seahawks by four touchdowns, just like Dave and I predicted.
I was all over this game.
You nailed it.
Yeah, I was talking to some friends the day before, and I said, I don't know what I said in the podcast last week, but I really feel the Packers are going to take Seattle down. I was really confident. And wouldn't you know, I was right on again, right on again. It's amazing.
I think between the two of us, let me see, I had them losing by 13. You had them losing by 21. And that's, well, I guess if you combine those, that was just about how it came on the Packers' favor.
Yeah, that's right. Too bad we have podcasts that memorialize how wrong we are.
We need to go back and erase that, I think. And but the question becomes, okay, as you look at this game, and obviously it was a pleasure to watch. It was a lot of fun. It was very gratifying. What's different between this team now that's won three games in a row, specifically this last game where they really dominated a very good Seattle team? How the last 3 weeks, how is this team different than the one that just, what, less than a month ago was losing four games in a row, including a couple of games where they gave up back-to-back 40-point games and they had given up like 150 points
over those
four games. Right. Oh, yeah. It was just a disaster. What, in your opinion, is different between the team we've seen the last three games and the team we saw the four games before that?
Well, can I draw back on my coaching career as a middle school and high school coach?
I was hoping you would.
Yeah, I've been waiting to pull these stories out. And
good, excellent.
I was waiting for the right season, right game, and this is it. But I do you think it's possible, like when I've coached teams, if there is one kid who is pretty good and he couldn't make it, he had a band practice or he's hurt or something, and he didn't play, and then so I had someone else play in that spot, and that person had been playing in that spot, and the domino effect worked its way down, that the whole thing kind of broke apart. Like we didn't have such an abundance of talent that you could just interchange players, that you really needed everyone to be in their spot, then it sort of worked. And do you think it's possible that that was true, that there's a few people that came back from injuries or got at least healthier than the way they had been playing, that that was enough? Because certainly the defense has turned things around. You had mentioned, I'll just go back, that they had given up 33 to the Falcons and 31 to the Colts, 47, 42 to the Titans and Redskins. And then they go and allow 13, 13, and 10 points.
Yeah.
Now, I think the Eagles were respectable. I think the Texans are not as respectable in offense.
Right, yeah.
But, and Seattle's been back and forth, but I certainly think – I mean, they're not New England Patriots necessarily, but I think that they're a decent team on offense. I mean, the defense has really turned it around. So you have to look at what's different on defense. And what is interesting, it's not Clay Matthews getting healthier.
No.
Of all the things I would think, it's been they've had a couple guys in the back end get healthy. And Demarius Randle, what a great interception that was.
Oh, the one right before halftime. Where Russell Wilson's rolling to his left, he throws back to his right. He's got a guy open in the end zone, and out of nowhere comes Randle making a play that a lot of receivers don't make. All hands leaping in the air, absolutely magnificent interception.
Yeah, I don't know if I can recall an interception like that ever in the Packers. Maybe other teams or in highlights from other games, but I can't recall a Packer ever doing that. Can you? Charles Woodson was always leaping in front of guys and, you know, cutting things off. But to run down a fly ball like that was amazing. I thought that was really good.
Randle has made a couple of amazing interceptions. You remember the Lions game that we saw? He made that pick. It was like a 50-50 ball, and he winds up taking the ball away from the receiver along the sideline. You know, he's done a couple of things this year, also a lot of lousy things this year. But he was magnificent in this game against Seattle.
Yeah, that was good. The other thing is they unloaded revealed a new blitz package, which I could watch over and over and over again. I remember when it happened. I mean, it made me so happy. I don't know if it's just because Seattle, but Christian Ringo running on the field late. And then, I mean, you've got to find this on Twitter where they replay it over and over and over again because it never gets old. He runs on the field because you can tell he's late. And then he turns a hard right and runs right into the line as they hike the ball and blows up the offensive lineman right into Russell Wilson. And that ends up creating a fourth down situation. Have you seen that now? You probably recall it, seeing it live, but have you seen it on Twitter? It's the best.
I have not seen the replay of it, but it was an absolute gem. And you think about it, though, the guy had a running start. Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely perfect. He runs parallel to the line, and he cuts it up. He gets right in the position, and he causes havoc. I mean, I would bet that in the film room this week, there will be a lot of replays of that, a lot of laughs, and then probably a reprimand, get your ass on the field in time. But I tell you, that was hilarious. It was great.
That was so funny. His run, yeah, the way he runs and everything is great. But now that I saw it, or someone had a great line of Packers disguise their new blitz package, or they start their new blitz package where Christian Ringo comes from the sidelines and takes it to the lineman. But and then you watch Seattle for the rest of the game try to replicate that blow-up situation by cheap shots left and right. What a dirty team this is. This is a team that, if they're not winning, they are just absolutely spoiled and entitled players. I can't stand how cheap and dirty they are. And it's not just the Packers. I think they've done this to a bunch of other teams too.
I think this is the other side of what McGinn wrote about in his Sunday column when he was talking about, you know, the energy that Seattle brings and, you know, the way they play. And he was, of course, you know, praising it and contrasting it against the Packers. But that's the other side of that coin. You know, when you play that way,
they can't shut down.
You've got to be able to play that way between the whistles and not after the whistle. And there was a lot of really kind of, you know, ugly, thuggish University of Miami, you know, circa 1990 type stuff, you know, where they were kind of the outlaw. And Seattle's got guys like that, and it brings out the worst when they're getting their ass kicked. You know, they behaved badly. Of course, I don't think either one of those teams likes each other very well. They have a lot of history, you know, going back to the Fail Mary, of course, the Packers, that horrible collapse. Green Bay beats them by 10 points last year, which up until this game was the most Seattle had lost by in, I don't know how many years, 5 years. So their worst two losses they've had over the last 5 years have been to the Packers. So there's, you know, these are teams that have a lot of animosity. You know, they out-physicaled the Packers in the opening game of 2014. It's kind of embarrassing, and I don't think Green Bay liked that. So there is – it's sort of like a rivalry game almost. They seem to play each other at least once a year, maybe going back to some of those Cowboy, you know, Packer games in the 90s, yeah, where you always seem to have that team on your schedule, and you always wind up playing them in the playoffs. There's just, you know – a long history going back to the Al Harris game, if you remember that.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I think that was pretty bitter for Seattle to swallow. The snow globe game where Seattle gets out to the 14-point lead and the Packers wind up blowing them off the field then after that. I just think that between the two clubs, there's just some history that's uncomfortable for both sides.
So, you know, going back to the question, so how is the team playing? Why is it playing different?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you go back to Rodgers and how what he said after games, and there was the time when they were losing is he didn't say, look, we're a good team, we can run the table. His first comment was that guys aren't bringing their A games to the game or they're not practicing hard. I don't know exactly how he said it, but he, you know, implied that people weren't working very hard. And you wonder, you know, Seattle – Of course they do, because they hate these guys, and you get punched in the mouth. You wake up and pay attention, right? And that's what Seattle did. They sort of woke them up. And I'm sure they were looking at this game way ahead of time, too, because I can't stand Seattle. I can't imagine that the Packers do either. That makes me think, well, we talked a little bit weeks ago about they're professionals, but desire and emotion, it plays a part of the game. Do you think that in the middle of the season, somehow they weren't trying very hard? They just didn't have the emotion. They kind of lost their way, and now – and maybe winning begets good emotions, then begets more winning, or how that probably – that's a factor as well. But is it possible this team was always there? It's just a matter of the effort they put forward.
I don't disagree with any of that, really. But I think it's a factor of those things, and maybe just, you know, good luck, you know, a circumstance. It just so happened that after that – terrible game against Washington and the one before against Tennessee. Well, now they get a team, you know, that's challenged. I mean, it's a weaker opponent. I think that, you know, losing the four games in a row, they know they got their backs against the wall, but they have a team that they can handle, and they gain a little confidence. Then they come home, which is a plus. It's snowing, which is a plus against a team that plays in a warm climate and usually inside and is challenged on offense, and you win again. So you've got a couple wins in a row. Well, now you've got a little momentum going. You're getting some of your guys back. Now, granted, the guys they got back, Randall and Rollins, they weren't playing that good before they got hurt. But, you know, you have them back, and that's better than, you know, Goodson and Gunter, you know. So that's a little bit of an upgrade. Yes, you have some other injuries. That isn't good. But you've got this kind of two-game winning streak going, and then you play a team in Seattle, you know, that has got to play in lousy weather, in cold weather. They haven't done well in cold weather historically. You also have a team that this year has been terrible on the road. I mean, they scored 5 points in Tampa, 3 points in Los Angeles. So you've got a team in a situation that's favorable to you. And they've lost a key defensive player. Now,
yeah, right.
The Packers lost Sam Shields. They played without him for most of the season, but they've had a chance to adjust to it. Well, this was their first game without Earl Thomas in the secondary, and there may have been some transitional issues. And I'm, you know, going to go back for the 1,000th time I've said this, but it doesn't matter who you play. It's when you play them. And I think they got Seattle in a good circumstance, cold weather, on the road, which is bad for them. And in the game after they lose – kind of the you know, the heart and soul of their defense, really. And I just think it all came together, a Packer team that's playing better, developed a little momentum. And I think those are the reasons why they've been able to string together three in a row after losing four in a row. And now you look at the next game against the Bears, and you'd like to think that, yeah, this would be a chance to kind of keep that momentum going against a team, even though it's on the road, a team they probably should beat. Things suddenly have kind of come together for the Packers. Later on, we're going to look ahead here. I'm not sure it's going to end happily for the Packers, but I don't see any reason why, you know, it shouldn't keep on going this week, just because they do kind of have it together now. Even though you got Aaron Rodgers hurt, they just seem to have something going on in the way that they didn't have it going on for those four games. This is the other side of that same coin.
Yeah. Well, and luck, like you say, is part of it. And we've seen in years where they've done really well, there have been key plays that if they'd have gone the other direction, maybe they lose that game, and now they don't have home field advantage. And in this game, there were a couple of things early that was a big difference. So if you go through the different drives, so the Packers score right away, which is great. And fast start is shown for this team. It has done really well. Well, then Seattle gets the ball. They go 13 plays. We make a stop. They kick the field goal. But it's not like our defense has lit them up that first series. So now
it looked to me, Dave, like Seattle could do whatever they wanted to do on that drive.
And it looked like Rawls was going to be a real problem running. But we did stop, so now it's 7-3. Now we get eight plays. You have a decent drive. We missed that field goal.
Mm.
The next series that Seattle has, that's where Wilson misses Jimmy Graham wide open down
wide
the field.
Open. Yep.
If
Yeah,
he
and
hit,
now that's some of that luck that you're talking
that's
about.
exactly right. Because if they score that in that play, now it's 10-7 Seattle,
yep.
and I bet you the whole game changes.
I totally agree.
Because
yep.
right after that, Green Bay goes five plays and punts. That's when was that all running plays? There was a period of time where maybe it wasn't that drive, where all of a sudden we went to a real conservative position. I thought, why are we doing that? Maybe it was in the second half. But we ended up punting, and that's when the interceptions started to pile up. And a couple of those interceptions.
No, the first one was legit. I mean, Graham falls down.
Yeah.
Graham, but I mean, it was clean. That kind of thing happens. That one was clean. But I want to say, was it the next three that went through receivers' hands, bouncing off their pads or off the helmet and right into a Packer defender? I felt bad a little bit for Russell Wilson, if that's possible, because, yeah, he threw five interceptions, but he didn't really deserve the five interceptions that he had. I mean, he was, you know, hitting guys right in the hands, and they weren't catching it and bouncing off of them right to the Packers. And I think that is where the luck really came in. Wilson missed a couple of guys, and then the ball bounced the wrong way three different times.
Yeah, and they didn't bounce to the ground. They bounced up.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know,
right to where
times.
A guy was standing. Yeah,
right. One in the end zone, which, you know, had they scored there, it would have been a
huge,
lot closer game.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, early on there was a fair amount of good fortune the Packers had, and then we rolled in the second half and to get a 38-10. So it looks like we just blew them out of the building. When, you know, in the first half it was still relatively close. Now, another reason I think the Packers are different than they have been early is that the offense is playing much better. And when the offense scores, has a lead, the defense is meaningfully better. I think they don't have to respect the run as much. They do have some pass rushers that are fairly effective. So if you know a team's going to pass, you know, they can get after the quarterback. But when I think they got to play teams honest, this defense, certainly when we had guys down.
Well, Seattle's offensive line is terrible, though, too. I think that that was a big factor.
And Christian Ringo exposed them as well. But you know, and why is the offense better? Have you any thoughts on that? Because there's a series two plays that I thought was indicative. But what are your thoughts on the offense?
There's a couple of things. I'm one of those people that believes that Aaron Rodgers' banged up legs is probably a good thing, because I think it requires him to stay in the pocket, and
get
you know
rid of it.
Maybe
yeah.
and maybe look to his options more quickly. Because he knows that he's not going to be able to buy time. He's going to have to make a quicker decision. I think that Jordy Nelson's finding his way back. I mean, the last couple of games, we have seen Jordy Nelson look like the guy that we remember Jordy Nelson being. I think we've seen the emergence and the development of Devontae Adams, not just in the long play downfield, but just generally the guy has – it seems like finally in his third season, he's not injured. He's kind of become, you know, a player. I think the third season was when James Jones really developed too. And I have to say that, you know, Ty Montgomery is, I mean, that is definitely a player that makes a difference because, yeah, he runs with the ball under his arm, but he creates such matchup problems. When you put him in the backfield, more times than not, a linebacker is going to have to try to cover him. You know, he's a wide receiver, but he's playing in the backfield. And so that requires a different kind of matchup. And the fact that he can also run with the ball, you know, makes – I know they put him back there out of necessity, but it's really turned out to be a plus for the offense. You put those things together and the fact that they figured out that Ripkowski can carry if necessary. They've got some great play out of their offensive line, especially in pass blocking.
Very good.
Lane Taylor has not been, you know, the problem that some people feared. They even got some play from Spriggs. I mean, I know Lang was back this week, but, you know, Spriggs had helped them. He had been kind of a revelation at guard. Not great, but certainly solid. Brian Bulaga's not been injured this season for a change. That's a refreshing deal. And the past three games until halftime this game, they had Cook. And I think he's been a big factor at tight end. Now, they're not going to have him. I'm guessing they're not going to have him for the rest of the season the way that you know, he didn't come out in his uniform in the second half. He was in street clothes.
I thought I saw the rest of the game, but I thought I saw a headline that said he was going to play this week.
I did not see that. The thing I read after the game said that Elliot Wolf was talking to a tight end on the practice squad, and you know, the speculation there was that they were going to elevate that guy from the practice squad. Now, if Cook can play, that's, I think, really important because he gives them a dimension, I think, at tight end that they really need. Now, it's hard to say. They say he hurt his chest.
Yeah.
So I don't think he fell on the ball, but I'm trying to think, what would a chest injury be? It's not ribs necessarily. It was sternum or something. I'm not sure, but you know, it was bad enough where he was in a hoodie in the second half, and that's what made me wonder if he was just done for the season. But you say you saw something that,
well,
he's going to be back.
Fox Sports and ESPN, and this is as of 11 hours ago. ESPN says Packers Jared Cook expected to play this week, even after chest injury. And
okay,
Fox
good.
News says isn't serious. I wonder if it was just a bruise, because it wasn't like he was extended. He just, I mean,
no.
Landed funny. So I wonder if it was more. I mean, I suppose you get a bruise around your heart. I mean, that it would scare the heck out of you, right? But
well, I was thinking, when he went down, it looked like he fell on his hand or his wrist, and then he was kind of holding his midsection. I thought, well, you know, maybe he got the wind knocked out of him. But, I don't, you know, whatever it is, they're a lot better team with him in there, and I think those are the differences that I've seen on offense. And now, I'm not saying it's good that Rodgers now has a bad calf and a bad hamstring. That's never going to be a good thing. But it has probably helped them a little bit, in that I think it's kept Aaron, you know, in the pocket longer, which is a plus for them, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my theory on the offense is that they have finally found an offense that has taken defenses out of the Denver style of playing them. And I think one thing that makes me mad is I think it takes McCarthy and their coaching staff a long time to adjust. I think they have eventually found ways, but I think they're very slow and methodical in changing and adjusting. But I think this idea of, you know, you play tight man-to-man on your wide receivers, you turn your back to the quarterback and run with your receivers, you get your linebackers back into coverage, and you cut off all those deep throws and make him run around, you know, back there. I think their ability to use Ty Montgomery as the running back and other running backs as kind of the safety valves and kind of the dinking and dunking has taken teams out of that defense. I thought Seattle played zone a few times. So let me describe two plays that I watched a couple times because I noticed this. And this was when the Packers were up 14-3, when they scored their third touchdown. It was a 3rd and 6 play at the Seattle 33. And I watched the defense, so everyone's playing man. They go with their receivers down the field, and the linebackers, it's 3rd and 6, mind you, the linebackers drop back 8 to 9 yards. Ty Montgomery goes out. They flip to him. He catches it and kind of runs forward for an easy first down, and no one's covering him because the linebackers are back. So he gets 9 yards. It's a first down. Now it's 1st and goal at the – I'm sorry, he ran 24 yards in that play. But he got the first down. And then the next pass was a touchdown to Jordy Nelson. And at that point, now the linebackers played up a little bit, and that allowed Jordy to sort of split a zone defense and touchdown. And I thought, I don't think the Seattle plays sort of a zone if they don't have to respect guys coming out of the backfield. I think they finally kind of figured out how to defend this defense that everyone has kind of played since Denver of last year. And that is big news for them. If they can play teams who are playing zone, I think Rodgers can pick them apart. But they have to respect it. So I think that is a huge difference from early in the season last year, you know, even a few weeks ago. That is my theory.
Well, you know, I don't know if they would be able to do that unless they had Montgomery in the backfield or Cobb in the backfield. I think in some ways it may be it seems kind of weird to say, but I think losing Eddie Lacy, you know, required them to do some things different. And that means having a pass catching threat other than a screen pass. I mean, Lacy, they ran some screens with Lacy and some with Starks. Screen passes.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, you know, the back coming out of the backfield, going out into the flat or, you know, kind of getting into that short zone and then being able to run with the ball. And the fact that both Cobb and Montgomery are receivers who can play in the backfield, that gives them that dimension that they can do that while these other teams are trying to take away the short stuff, the stuff across the middle, the stuff in the passing lanes, but they can't cover the guy out of the backfield then. And it only works if you have a back that can catch the ball and run after the catch.
Right.
And that really isn't Eddie Lacy's game.
No. No, as much as Eddie, I think if Eddie comes back for a one-year contract, you use him maybe early, kind of to set and see how your running game is going. You use him at the end of the game to close games down. But I think in the middle of the game or majority of the game, I think this idea of Ty Montgomery, not just this season, but I think in future seasons, unless they draft someone like him, you know, because he's a good runner too. I really like the way he's running on the offense too. It feels like that touchdown that he scored on was it on the 2 yard line? What was that? Was that the first touchdown second touchdown we scored? Did he punch that in?
I'm not sure which touchdown it was, but yeah, I mean that was like a legitimate type, you know, run play in a scrum. And I, you know, the only part that bothers me is that I don't like him between the tackles so much. I know he's a bigger guy than he's bigger than most wide receivers. But, you know, there's a reason why NFL running backs usually don't play beyond 30. I mean, they take a lot of pounding, a lot of abuse. And I just don't want to see Montgomery take that kind of abuse. I would rather see him, you know, carry the ball 3-4 times a game, something like that, but have it be him in the backfield where it's a threat. But you're mostly using him as a passing matchup rather than having him, you know, run. What did he run this time? 9 times in this game?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, I think that's too many, even 5 or 6, but don't expose him any more than you have to because he's not that big. You're going to shorten his career and limit his effectiveness. I mean, he hurt his shoulder in this game and he's just, I don't think he's built bigger than a normal wide receiver, but he's not built big enough to be a sort of guy that, you know, is going to carry the ball between the tackles, you know, 10, 12 times a game. I just don't think that's who he is.
Well, I'm with you with Randall Cobb. I think they should not hand the ball off to Randall Cobb ever again.
No.
I think that is stupid. And how dumb is it to do it after he twisted both ankles?
That was really bad. Yeah.
Who is calling that play? That is what concerns me about the Packers from a kind of a very macro level of they still make decisions that I think that's very, very stupid. But I don't think I'm with you on Ty Montgomery. I mean, these guys, I know they have short careers, but I think you have to kind of go with the idea that they're going to have short careers and get a new Ty Montgomery 3 or 4 years from now. I think he runs just fine. I think giving him the ball 7, 8, 9 times a game with a lot of draw plays, a lot of bounce outside kind of stuff, but there are a couple between the tackles that I thought he runs the play that's as it's blocked. He hits that hole, and he falls forward. I think he's big enough to take that role, but I think you're right. That won't allow him to have a beautiful 7, 8 year career. I think it'll be more like 2 to 3 to 4 year. But I think that is great for him. I don't mind him running, but I'm looking at the rushing chart right here, and Ty Montgomery carried for 9 times and Christian Michael 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
That combination, and given the fact that, you know, now this is a threat in the passing game, do you think a Montgomery-Michael combination is better than Lacy right now for this team?
I do. It's not that I don't like Eddie Lacy. In fact, I've come around or came around a lot on Eddie Lacy. I like Eddie Lacy, the guy, too. I mean, just what you read about him, he seems like he's a good guy and he's kind of a fun guy and easygoing and all that kind of stuff. I just don't like him in the Packer offense. I think he's kind of a – what did they say about Randy Moss in Minnesota? He was a programmatic non-fit, I believe is what Brad Childress said about him. And I think they were speaking about his emotional – yeah. But I think in terms of what Lacy is, the kind of player he is, I think he is a programmatic non-fit in Green Bay. His kind of game, you know, the more traditional, you know, bam it forward kind of running game, I think that bogs down the flow of the Packer offense. I think what we've seen out of necessity since Lacy went down, that's the kind of flow that I think the Packers should be going with. I mean, they're a lot more multiple now with formations, with routes. They just seem to, you know, be clicking better without the need to kind of, you know, have power formations and run that guy, you know, between the tackles like they were doing with Lacy. And it's not that he's not a good player. I'm sure he might fit in some other kinds of offenses. I just don't think that what he brings, his skill set, is complementary to the other pieces that they have. And so I kind of like the idea of Montgomery and Michael. I know they got to get rid of James Starks, but maybe they get a, you know, another, you know, kind of running back, but again, the kind of running back that is going to be able to, you know, catch the ball in addition to carrying it. I just don't think this is a big back offense.
See, I disagree with you on that. I think if you next year Starks is off the team and you get Lacy, I can't imagine they'd sign him for more than a year.
No.
And then you have a combination of Montgomery, Michael, and Lacy, if they can keep all three. But I would sign Lacy with the intent that he's not my number one back. That, you know, we run the offense through Montgomery and you get a combination of Michael and Lacy, and you can kind of depend on the team you're playing. If you're playing in cold weather, if you're playing a bad run defense, well, then you're getting a healthy dose of the big guy. But we're playing Seattle, and, you know, they got a very good run defense, and our line is light, well, then, you know, it's going to be 75% Montgomery. We're going to run it that way. It gives you options. I like Lacy a lot. I don't know if you could convert him to a fullback. I guess he's probably too good and can probably find a team to be a
right.
You know, and I don't know his blocking, but he's big enough to be a fullback, and then he would give you that running game. You know, that I wonder if they could convert him. But I just think that right now, the way the offense is going, having a threat out of the backfield, Montgomery, I think is huge. And we've talked about it. Other podcasts have talked about it. The writers, I think, have talked about it. It feels like McCarthy has finally come around, and maybe Rodgers as well, that you sometimes have to dink and dunk down the field, and that's pulling these defenses out of that just deep shell that they're playing us in.
Now, I want you to give me, this is your chance now to set the over-under. Eddie Lacy's weight after coming back, after sitting out, you know, a half a season.
That's a great question. I assume that he's excellent at John Madden football right now. Probably a lot of Xbox games. That's a good question. What his weight is right now, or
I would say by the time he comes, you know, the guy is going to be 260 at least.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So I just, that's my major concern with him and all this time off. Is the guy going to go to seed entirely? And are they going to want to sign him if he's you know 260 265 after all this inactivity? Or I don't know, maybe there's stationary bike or something to keep himself in shape. I don't know what it is, but do you really want to even give a 1 year contract to a guy who, you know, has conditioning issues, shall we say?
I mean, he was very effective at a big weight. Even last year when everyone was down on him and his weight, yeah. He had a couple of games last year where he was very good.
True, yeah, true.
I think you can't sign him as your number one. You can't count on him. But as a complement to other guys that you can, I mean, if you want to smash the football all game, you can have, if you keep Michael, I think he can fill that role. He had a 3.6 yard average against Seattle. I thought he ran pretty hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
I agree.
But I think, like we've said, you run the ball less in this offense. I think there's a place for Lacy on this team. It's just not your number one back. And then, yeah, maybe it's 260 slims down to 250. Let them batter away. I mean, when you're up by 14 points and it's their early fourth quarter, you got to burn the clock. It's a good time for Lacy.
You know, I was looking at the stat sheet because you've been, you know, mentioning some of these stats, and I just flipped down and I thought it was a mistake. Aaron Rodgers' passer rating at 150.8. I mean, he was good, but did you think he was that good? I mean, that's incredible.
You know, I thought there was a couple of stats that he it was a pro footballer, someone had said of all his passes, he had one that wasn't either dropped or it was it was like one poor throw in all 23 or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah, I saw that.
He played very, very good. You know, a couple of the throws, he's excellent. And poor weather, I mean, you watch Russell Wilson, a couple balls he throws, you can't tell. He throws like kind of how I would throw when it's cold outside. My hand can't grip it. And Rodgers, you just don't miss a beat with him. But one complaint I would have with Rodgers, when they are able to get guys off sides or they have, you know, too many men on the field because he snaps it too quickly, he is just automatically throwing that to Nelson. I thought there was one play where they got a free play, and if he'd have scanned the field, he had, I think it might have been Adams or maybe Cobb or somebody else who was open, but he just automatically flipped it to Nelson as a Hail Mary and, you know, free play, let's see what you have. I think if you get that, don't treat it so nonchalantly, you know, just throw it for grabs. You know, scan the field. You legitimately have a free play. Make the most of it. And I thought he missed on one of those free plays.
Yep,
I think there are a couple of dump-offs that he missed still. He just doesn't want to throw it short all the time. But it's very hard to blame his game and, you know, really any aspect, especially given all the injuries he must be having. And I would say in the future, if I'm the coach in the Packers, I'm telling Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb that they need to go down quickly. I think Aaron Rodgers, I'd say to you, even when you're healthy, I don't want you running as much past the line of scrimmage. We can't afford to have you get hurt. And it's usually because he doesn't get hurt usually getting tackled. It's usually as he's being pushed out of bounds or, you know, it's just something you don't anticipate that he's getting hurt. Just stay in the pocket, move around a little bit, but don't make too much. You're hurting us by getting hurt, you know, later in the season. And with Randall Cobb, I would say, dude, if you've got a first down, you're too small. Just go down. Don't
yeah.
try to break tackles. Just go down. You're always going to – the second guy is going to come and plaster you, and you're going to get hurt. Just – if you're Adams or bigger or Nelson's bigger, but Cobb, just make a move if it's not there. Just hit the dirt. I'm so tired of these guys getting hurt all the time.
I think I found the quote that you were mentioning. It was from Pro Football Focus. Rodgers has graded as the best quarterback in the NFL since week 7, which has boosted his season ranked 5th overall. Against Seattle, Rodgers was off target on just one pass deep left and was phenomenal under pressure, completing 6 of 8 passes for 143 yards, 2 touchdowns. His passer rating in those situations was 156.3, which I think 158.3, I think is perfect.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, so yeah, I mean, it was truly a phenomenal game. But you referenced, and this did not count against him in the stat sheet, but you referenced him drawing guys offsides and then having a free play. What surprises me, why would, if you knew you had a free play, if you saw that you caught him and you could see the flags going up, why would you not then just try to drop it right in on that receiver deep? He overthrew,
yeah,
and I forget who it was. But if you have a free play, it doesn't matter if it gets picked off.
Right.
Just drop it in there and let your guy make a play or let it be intercepted. It doesn't matter. You're going to get 5 yards at worst.
Well, for some reason, he doesn't seem to understand that Jordy's not as fast as he used to be. He is constantly overthrowing Jordy Nelson on those deep balls.
True.
But
he
overthrew Adams later in the game. But he threw a great ball to Adams, you know, to start the game. So it's not like he's not a good deep ball thrower. But for some reason, he just not seem to time Nelson very well. But I agree. I don't know if it has to be 40-yard chuck down the field plays every time you draw him off sides. You know, if you got a 20-yard gain, that would be good too. I feel like they're very good at catching guys offside. I'd be really curious this year, or maybe even going to last year, what their completion is. Now, in 2011, when they would have that, it seemed like it was always a touchdown. But I bet you last two seasons, I bet you our success rate on those plays are pretty low.
Well, I think so, too. And maybe the reason that Rodgers is always looking for Nelson, and I guess I heard this after the game, but I kind of forgot it. Rodgers and Nelson had 2 touchdowns yesterday. That gives them 57,
yeah,
which ties them with Brett Favre and Antonio Freeman for the most prolific quarterback-receiver combination in team history.
Yeah, that's great.
So, yeah, I mean, so you know they're going to pass it, yeah.
The
you know,
second was beautiful, or Allison kind of points where to throw it, and he goes
and gets it.
It's great.
That was so classic. He points, and Rodgers throws it right there, bang.
Yeah.
It was It was hilarious. And then, of course, the big spike then too from Jordy. Jordy last week, you could see when he, did that first down thing along the sideline. I just he's feeling more comfortable. He's looking like himself. I don't know that he's ever going to be the burner that he was down the sidelines, like you were mentioning, but he is sure one hell of a possession receiver. And there's a place for those
Oh,
guys,
you
you know?
need
I mean,
that? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we don't have a tight end to speak of. You need a guy that can just catch the ball and get your first down. I'm surprised we're not down two tight ends. I mean, now that Cook got hurt, but that hit that Richard Rodgers took, holy cow, that.
Oh man. Well, that's another example of Seattle. I
I
mean, they,
know. I
that's who they are.
why there it's why there isn't some kind of retaliation to say you can't just get these free plays and have no consequence. The league must see this. I mean, I would think. I mean, you don't want to get a penalty. You don't want to hurt somebody. But I mean, someone's got to set Seattle straight. They're a bully out there, and you got to do something about that. They're terrible. I wonder if they were my team, would I have enjoyed cheering for the Detroit Pistons back in the day? Seattle's taking that role. I mean, the bad boys of the league. It's really pathetic because you play that role just like the Pistons when they finally lost. They wouldn't shake hands with the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah,
That's
right.
like, if you're going to be the bad boys, that is part of it. You are poor sports. You are, poor human beings. I mean, they show the Man of the Year award for each team. I thought, how do you pick a Man of the Year award for Seattle? That's got to be a tough pick, but
Well, that guy also then had a it was Cliff Avril, right?
yeah.
And he wound up getting a personal foul like shortly after
Well, he
that.
punched Lang in the nuts, didn't he?
In the nuts, yeah,
Yeah, that's your man of the year at Seattle.
Well, now what does that tell you about the rest of the team? I mean,
Yeah,
he's very, yeah.
or maybe that's how they grade it. Maybe that's what they to them, that's great.
Hey, I'll tell you what I don't understand about penalties. And this happened, I think, in the first half. There was a penalty on each team. It was 5 yards against Seattle, and there was a personal foul
Yeah.
on the Packers. Now, normally when there's two fouls in the same play, they're offsetting, and they just re-rack it and go again. But this time, they disregarded the Seattle penalty, and they took the 15 against Green Bay.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that you probably need to assess that major penalty under any circumstances. Fine. But there was a Seattle penalty. Shouldn't that then have been a 10-yard penalty on the Packers? In other words, if you're going to accept the one, you got to accept them both. So Seattle gets their 5-yard minor penalty, and then the 15's assessed on the Packers, a net loss of 10 yards for Green Bay. That doesn't seem right to me that you have two fouls on the same play and you're going to throw out one
Yeah.
against one team to accept the personal fault. That just seemed wrong to me.
Life doesn't seem fair on that because I know that rule is true. If you have a personal foul, that wipes out the other penalty. I think I knew that before the game started. I would have told you that. But did you not know that rule, or did it just doesn't seem fair to you?
I think I knew that you always get assessed on a personal foul, but I guess maybe it hasn't happened for Green Bay recently.
Yeah.
See, other games, and it just felt well, not that they shouldn't have assessed the personal foul, but why you disregard the other penalty when the other team did something wrong?
Yeah.
That when I think about it, that doesn't seem right. And I totally get you can't let a personal foul go and call it offsetting. But if there are two penalties on the play, then you should assess both.
I think when you get into a shoving match like they have, it should have been offsides and then unnecessary roughness on both teams. I don't know why you would have given it to only Dayton Jones and not the Seattle guy. I thought maybe they would give it on both, and then the whole thing would just be offsetting and it would start over. It was kind of a tough time to do it. The Packers are up 7-3. Seattle had the ball. It was 2nd and 7, and then they get a was it offside? A false start.
It
So
was
now it's
false.
going to be, yeah, 2nd and 12. So you're like, good. Now, we're pinning them back. All of a sudden, oh, we just gained 15 yards. Now, God being a Packers fan, set the thing straight because right after that was the Morgan Burnett
Right,
interception. So
exactly.
it all worked out in the end. But yeah, I thought, I mean, that felt unfair, right? I feel like Seattle is always kind of needling you, and you push back, and oh, you get a penalty. The coach is that way. The team's that way. Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman.
We'll find a way to hit cheap shot, yeah, and then kind of look like what? That whole team. They should. Someone. The United Nations should go in there and lift Russell Wilson out of that team because he's a good guy and he plays with a bunch of jerks. I just hope that team completely implodes. I want to see someone take Michael Bennett. Even that play at the end when Randall Cobb got on the kneel down play.
Oh,
Randall
man.
Cobb gets blown up for no reason, but then Michael Bennett does a fake like he's going to run into the line and stops. What a bunch of jerks, man.
They're a very difficult team to like, and they've become that team when they get beat, you just feel good, you know. It's sort of like the Vikings almost, you know. If your team can't win, at least that team can lose. That's good.
It is good. You're right. I am hating the Vikings less because I think the coach is not a bad guy, and they haven't had Randy Moss like players lately.
That's true. And they've really been injured this season. It's almost feeling sorry for them in a way, you know, because they lost their running back, they lost their quarterback. Yeah, and you're right. Their coach does seem like a pretty solid guy.
The fans, you know, they are long suffering, those fans in Minnesota. But you know, Pete Carroll, on the other hand, I mean, he took University of Southern California and ruined that program, and then leaves terrible before they get penalized. I mean, this is a Pete Carroll is a horrible human being. I people ought to they ought to have awards for the worst man of the year and just give that to Pete Carroll.
He's annoying with all that, like the gum chewing, and sort of has that Ditka thing, you know, going on. Yeah. I never liked the guy, never liked his look, and I like his mannerisms, and even his comments after the game were, you know, they were almost gracious, you know, but he will never totally, you know, give it up to the other team and acknowledge the fact, you know, that you got smoked. He's just, I don't know, he's a guy that's, it's easy to dislike him, and the whole USC thing was unsavory, to say the least.
Yeah, I feel like society would be better off if we tied Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh back to back on
man.
A boat and float that off into the ocean and let them never come back.
There were two guys right there who deserve each other.
Yes, they do.
No.
You want to take a break?
Yeah, I think we'll take a break, and then we'll talk a few more minutes about the Packers' really resounding four-touchdown victory over the Seattle Seahawks. This is kind of a feel-good podcast, Dave. We haven't had a chance to do a lot of these. In fact, it's been quite a while that, you know, we have this level of satisfaction in a victory. So
it feels good to call a game, or, you know, to predict a win like this too. Like, I just feel great about it. You know,
it's very satisfying. And I'm sure this will be bared out in the second half of the show when we talk about the betting lines. I'm sure those reflected all the optimism that we had going into this game.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break. We're going to do our thing with the technical business here, and we're going to come back in just a minute with more Packers therapy. Packers therapy, just as promised. Chris and Dave talking about the Packers' victory over the Seahawks, 38-10. First time Seattle has been beaten by more than 10 points, and I want to say since 2011, I think. It's been a long, long time. The only team, of course, to beat them by 10 during that stretch, I believe, was the Packers. So while Bob McGinn, was busy polishing Pete Carroll's knob in his column on Sunday. I mean, really, Bob McGinn has gone full troll. I mean, he is just trolling Packer fans now. He goes out of his way in his column on Sunday to talk about Lance Easley and how he had the better view and how he made the right call on that play. Now, maybe that's true.
Is that the replacement ref?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I mean, okay, for one thing, maybe that's true. Okay, let's just say for a minute that it's true. But to bring that up in this article, I mean, he knows that's going to get under the skin of 95%, if not 100%, of Packer fans. Why are you doing that? Because the guy is a troll. And it's every week he's looking to get under the skin of Packer fans. That's the way it is with this guy. He is a total embarrassment. He is such an asshat. I have had it with Bob McGinn and his trolling. He's become a joke now, in my opinion. When he got loose with that Lance Easley crap in his Sunday column about the Packers-Seahawks game, that was just complete trolling nonsense. I mean, just give it up, McGinn. God.
I feel like he is one voice that will speak against Ted Thompson, against Mike McCarthy, who kind of called him on the carpet as he sees it. And he got some mention during the telecast. They showed the newspaper headlines, and I thought two of them were Bob McGinn's headlines. Do you see that?
Yeah.
He's
a full. I think one of them said McGinn is a troll, or I think it said McGinn.
I am a troll.
And I am a troll. Yes, I mean, and that's what the guy is. And I would get mad about it if it wasn't so hilarious to see him breaking his back to irritate Packer fans. Please, please, my fellow Packer fans, don't take the bait. This is a guy who is just trying to irritate you.
I guess. Well, he's doing it correctly in terms of at least getting eyes on his articles, because when
game's
over, I do search for his summary because I want to hear what he has to say. You know, is he going to be complimentary? Is he going to throw McCarthy under the bus? I look for it. So as much as you may not like it, it's working.
I mean, he would not have lasted as long as he has in the business unless people, weren't reading him. And and the thing is that he's perverted poor Michael Cohen, the second-year reporter in the Journal Sentinel who does the podcast with him. Dave, I know you know your Bible, and you know that the punishment is worse for those that pervert others. And Bob, again, he's perverting poor young Michael Cohen.
Caused him to stumble.
He has caused him to stumble. The 145-pound youth is, now because he's trying to be like that little dog, the big dog and the little dog in the cartoons, Spike, and the little dog is running around the big dog, and poor Michael Cohen is like, hey, Spike, hey, Spike, come on, and that's what he's doing. Except, hey, Bob, look at me. Look, I can be ridiculously critical too. Look at me. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. But I would never criticize another podcast, but yeah.
I'm not criticizing their podcast. In fact, their podcast is pretty good if you listen to it at 1.5 speed. If you listen to it at a regular speed, you'll fall asleep behind the wheel and kill yourself.
And fast forward it. Yeah, that's exactly right. It is a slow pace, and they talk about music for about 15 minutes.
Exactly.
So they should shift that to the end like we did.
To the end of the podcast so people can hear the Packer stuff, and then they can – if you want to talk about Lou Rawls, I think they chose Lou Rawls this week because, the running back for the Seahawks, Rawls, right? Okay.
Yep.
So, yeah, and also because McGinn is, he's a little older than me, he'll remember the Lou Rawls hit from the 70s. But anyway, I had to get that off my chest. When I saw that thing about, Lance Easley and how he had the better view than Packer fans and it was the right call, I knew that he was just trying to, put out the chum in the water for the Packer fans to grab onto. So,
yeah, that's fair.
Okay, what else? A couple other things I wanted to mention. Dean Lowry. Now, I thought Lowry was some kind of a seasoning that you could buy
at the store. Yeah, exactly.
And it's so, but this guy now has got 2 sacks the last 2 games. He's pretty active. I wonder if they, as he matures and figures out the NFL game, I wonder if they're not going to have a guy that can be a contributor for them. I was, it's 2 weeks in a row now the guy has kind of flashed. I was pretty pleased with that. I'm just beginning to wonder if he's a guy that is going to help him out in situations.
Yeah, I guess if that's true, then I have to back off my criticism of Ted Thompson a little bit. But I agree. I watched him on hit the sack that he had. I thought was impressive, and I thought he's a young, active player that. I mean, if you're going to win a Super Bowl, make the playoffs, you need a couple of draft picks to make an impact. And unfortunately for the Packers, it's not your first rounder ever.
Yeah, he was like a fourth, wasn't he? Maybe something like that.
But somebody by, this time of the season kind of turning on the switch and becoming a factor. And certainly they've needed it with Nick Perry out and Matthews playing with one arm. He's been very effective. And they said in the broadcast that apparently the coaches, I don't know if it was McCarthy or who, said that we need to give this guy more playing time, and I thought, really, he's demanding more playing time? But sure enough, you know, I thought he looked like a pretty active player. He's going to be interesting to watch through the rest of the season.
Martinez is out. Ryan played only 7 plays, so they had to go with Joe Thomas. I think he played every play in that game.
I heard that, yeah.
Matthews is limited, but they, you know, they got a little bit of help, you know, from Lowry, but also from Elliott. He showed up a little bit. I think he might have had a sack. I'm not 100% sure.
Sack. He had 2 yeah. tackles for loss, or 1.5 tackles for loss, a sack, 5 total tackles. You know, I wonder if Jayron Elliott and who do we just mention, Dean Lowry, if these are guys that, you know, in place of a injured Clay Matthews and a Julius Peppers, where did Julius show up here? I know Julius was relatively active. He had one tackle.
Yep. Tackle.
You know, maybe give these guys. I've always liked Jayron Elliott. He's a king of the off or the preseason.
Yep.
But I think we
Mr. August.
He is Mr. August. But I've seen him play in games now where he's made. Maybe not every play, but he will make a play here and there, and that's what you need on defense. Is sometimes one play on third down can make all the difference. I like Elliott. I wish they would give him more playing time.
Yeah, I do too. And the thing, when you're going to win these kind of games, you're going to have to get players who you don't normally get contributions from to step up, and they've been able to get that. You know, and even Peppers had been pretty much silent and quiet. But now when they need him, he's showing up. And I think that's how you win these games, is when people that haven't really necessarily been called on to be contributors can step up when you need them in cases like this. And so I thought that was really worth, you know, mentioning. And one more thing before and then my points are exhausted. But I was wondering, now that you've had a chance to, you know, think about it for a week and may watch the game and hear the commentary, are you ready at this point to change your opinion about Morgan Burnett?
Good question. That was a great interception. They're using him as a linebacker now. I don't notice it during the game. It's hard to see when he's playing a safety, he's playing up versus like the hybrid safety linebacker role. I've seen a couple articles about it, but I have not looked into it real intensely. Is that a good position for him? Is he that kind of new age linebacker where he can cover and also kind of play the run as really well? I don't know what the difference is, right? Didn't Arizona kind of start this trend with one of their players?
Yeah, with the Honey Badger, I believe it was.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I need to see more from Morgan Burnett before I say he's more than just a solid player. You know, I grade him a C or a B minus. Is he a high B or an A type player? I need a lot more from him. But he had a very good game against Seattle. The defense as a whole seems to be able to play Seattle pretty decent. When he gets an interception, at least he's learned not to go down. That's a huge
That's because Julius Peppers is not, you know, waving his arms.
Playing like, less, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I guess if he weren't playing, we'd miss him that much more, but I'm not ready to change my opinion of him of just a guy yet. Is that fair? How about you?
Well, you know, I thought he played well last week, and he did nothing this week to change my mind. And as I've kind of, you know, thought back on his season, I think he's had a real solid season. And, of course, they even mentioned that during the broadcast. You know, it would not surprise me, you know, to see him – you know, become a Pro Bowl player this season yet. I mean, I think he's putting together that kind of year. I don't think he's been great, but I think he has certainly been, you know, worthy of consideration for that. And I think part of it's because he is versatile. I mean, he can play in the box. He, you know, has got a couple of interceptions. He's been very active, and I've been pleased with him. I think he's come on as the season's worn on. I don't think he was as good early in the season, but I think, you know, the last, you know, last half dozen games, I think he's really come on.
Well, I think the two players that I'm more impressed with, I think Quentin Rollins and Ladarius Gunter have played a lot better. You know, not lighting up the field. There are no Richard Sherman or, you know, I don't think they're Pro Bowlers, but I think they have gone from fail grades against Tennessee and Washington too. I think very serviceable, and I think that's what they need. Maybe they haven't played receivers. I mean, Seattle isn't known for having great receivers. I think those guys are okay. I think Wilson makes a lot out of those receivers. But I thought the last couple weeks I felt that they have done well. I'll be really interested to see how they play against the Bears and if they can keep up some of the interceptions, you know, keep the score low and see the defense continue to play. It feels like there's confidence is moving in the defense's favor, that they can get a bit of an identity. I do think they can get after the passer if they have a little bit of a lead. And if Matthews gets more and more healthy, maybe it could be a good defense.
But, you know, it's surprising to me. Now, I guess in some ways it's not, because they've played some offensively challenged teams the last three games. But, you know, to go from where they were, which was just an embarrassment kind of on par with that, you know, 2011 defense, 2013 where they gave up so many points, to being, you know, a team that is really quite solid on defense. I would think that against the Bears they would, you know, continue that. The Vikings are offensively challenged. I mean, they should be okay there too. The real challenge will be against the Lions. And, you know, I'm kind of feeling right now, and I'm not sure what your, you know, spidey sense is telling you, but I would not, I mean, I'm expecting a Packers win this weekend. I'm, you know, I'm like a 75% chance of a Packer win this weekend. I'm less certain about the Vikings. I think that could go either way. It's going to be in Green Bay outside, which I think will be an advantage. So maybe it's a 52-48 kind of feeling about Packers beating the Vikings. Then it comes down to that Lions game. I expect the Lions to lose one of the two games they have against the Giants on the road and the Cowboys on the road. So I am fully expecting the last game of the year to be for the NFC North Division title. And the Packers are playing on the road in an environment they traditionally struggle even when they have good teams. And I think they'll probably wind up losing that game. And that's kind of how I see this playing out. You know, could be, of course, dramatically wrong that, you know, they could stub their toe against, you know, Chicago or against the Vikings. Like, a loss to the Vikings would be fatal. I mean, that will be the end of that.
Right.
But I just have this feeling that they're gonna tease us and then disappoint us the last game of the season. That's kind of how I see this playing out.
Yeah, well, that's the Packers have trained us to be disappointed. You know, they give us hopes and dash them. I mean, there's been a number of seasons. I guess every team, unless they win the Super Bowl, that happens.
Yeah.
But you know, I can just see we beat the Bears, we beat the Vikings, and then lose to the Lions, and we're out. You know, I just picture that. I feel like that's happened already. I've read that book already. I don't know if that's going to be true. I think the Lions, I'm looking at their schedule, and they have had a pretty good run over the last, let's see, nine games.
They've won five in a row, right? Yeah, I think they've won five
in a row, and they won three before they lost to the Texans. But, you know, I'm looking at the teams that they've played, and, you know, there are no teams in the NFL that are, other than maybe a couple, that are heads and shoulders above the rest. But, you know, they've beaten the Eagles, the Rams, I mean, the Redskins, that's a decent win, but they barely won. Beat the Vikings a couple times, one they should have certainly lost.
Oh, man, I'll say.
Jaguars, yeah. Saints, Bears. I mean, these are sort of like middle of the road. These are all close, relatively close games for them. You know, the Lions have had the ball kind of fall in their favor. This is not a dominant team. Well, here they go. They got to play at New York and at the Cowboys. I expect them to lose both of these games. I don't think they're talented enough for that. They get a couple of injuries like everyone else usually does, you know, in tough games. And, you know, they could be a lot different teams. So I'm going to actually say that I think they can beat Detroit. My fear is they lose to Chicago. I just feel like something like that could happen. And we get on the podcast next week and just, you know, swear up and down as they lose to a team they should beat. This would be a big test for me. If they can go to Chicago and beat the Bears like they should, win by 20 points. You know, when they were in the Super Bowl, when they played bad teams, they crushed them. I think the Packers should crush the Bears. And if they don't, they lose. Or if it's a tight game, then, you know, I don't know if this is a team that's going to go very far in the playoffs. But I'm not worried about Lions yet. I want to see them play at the Giants, at the Cowboys, because I want to see them play a good team before I give judgment. The record aside,
you know, I think any win at this point is good. If they win by 1 point in Chicago, and they've had trouble in Chicago, you know, from time to time. You know, I remember that game in the wind. You know, that it was just, it kind of neutralized the passing game. In December, you don't know what you're going to get in Chicago the same way you don't know what you get in Green Bay or any of the outdoor stadiums in the north. And so that could be an enormous factor. The Bears haven't packed it in yet. I mean, they you know, they played hard this past week. I know they wound up, you know, losing, but they played hard. I don't think this is necessarily going to be a cakewalk, but I think the Packers should certainly win. And if even if it's by a field goal, that's good enough, because it's going to come right down then to beating the Vikings. And then what do you got with the Lions? If the Lions lose twice, which is very possible, that becomes very interesting, because that opens the door for the Vikings if the Packers don't beat them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, this is why we're sports fans. I mean, we want our teams to win the championship, but really this is right now what it's about. Our team is in contention. In fact, it might be more interesting than if they had, you know, like one or two losses like the Cowboys. Right now, they have to win. I mean, every game, every play of every game has enormous weight, great gravity. And this is why we're sports fans, because it's exciting. You know, it's, this is the time of the year in where I live. The days are short. It's cold. It's snowing. And this is the kind of thing that refreshes you, refreshes the spirit, to have your team in the conversation, in contention. And as much as I want the Packers to win, because I want them to win the championship, I just want them to win to remain relevant and to, you know, make podcasts like ours or the ones that I download. You know, you look forward to it. And you wouldn't, if your team was crappy, if your team had won, you know, three games at this point, I guess we'd probably still do the podcast. But, you know, would it be must listen? You know, I'm not sure that it would. This makes it fun to be relevant. And even, you know, even if you don't win, as long as you're relevant, that to me is the main thing.
Yeah, I appreciate watching this game and beating someone bad like Seattle, bad in terms of bad character.
Right, right.
You know, and so I had 3 hours of joy. It was really fun. It was the best movie I've seen in a long time. It was, I enjoyed every second of it. And that might be the high point of the season. You know, we lose next week, that's it. You know, the movie's over.
But we'll always have Seattle.
We'll always be able. I did tape it too, so I can go back to it.
I did too. It's just waiting for me in the queue whenever I'm feeling low, I guess.
That's, you right. Know? That's right. And I watched that Christian Ringo play. That will never make
brilliant.
Me sad. Yeah, I'll go back to that anytime I feel blue.
Watch next week. They'll do the same thing. And it was a real play. It was the mad genius Dom Capers.
I love it. I don't see why wouldn't they try that again. I guess you could, if he runs and they don't hike it, then you just are at the line of scrimmage just like you normally would. Well, why wouldn't you? It wasn't like he timed it perfectly either. I mean, he was a good second before, you know, he blew into his guy. But get a 300-pound player with a full head of steam? What? Yeah, that's
yeah,
great.
Man,
right up the middle, blast that guy through. Yeah, that,
I'm loving it. Yeah,
I love it. I love it.
So we must have some Packers therapy, hotel and casino betting lines, winners to talk about. I'm assuming Mitt Miller was on his game, right?
Of course. And cool thing is we had 20 people play this week. This, I think,
20
was,
people?
Yeah.
My God.
A lot of people play this week. That's a good – you know, and I got to hand it to Mike. I realize he has a link when he sends the email back to people who participate, so that they can put their picks into a Google spreadsheet, I think, directly, which is amazing. So Mike is really on his game, getting it to us. We do have a tie for winner. So we're going to have two people are bunking up again. So
okay,
ready to go through this? We'll go
absolutely
pretty quick. All right, the first one we talked about was how many receiving yards would Nelson have after a pretty good game. Last week, you set the line at 46. As good as a game he had, he did not go over 46. He had 41 yards. So I said the over. He had the under.
That was a hell of a line by me, I'll tell you.
That's pretty good. You're right.
That was darn good. Yeah.
Number two, I said, how many sacks would Green Bay have? You set the line at 1.5. I took the over, and they did. They had three. Mm-hmm. So they had a good day for sacks.
I thought Russell Wilson would scramble around and avoid it, but he was not on his game in any phase.
No, I was frustrating, right? It's like, keep that guy in the pocket, man. He is so sneaky. He's good. It's hard not to like him. He's good. Number three, I said, how many total plays would Ty Montgomery have? You set the line at 7.5, and I said the over, and it was the over. He had 12, which I think is the right number for him. I think 12 touches, catching or rushing, is perfect. I hope they keep that high. If it's 6 or under, I bet you they lose. I think if it's a high single digits into double digits, I think those are wins for the Packers.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I maybe would go maybe more 10-ish than 12. I just don't want to see the guy exposed too much running the ball.
Isn't that something that Ty Montgomery is such a key factor this year? I mean, if you think about last year.
He was hurt most of last year.
When he got hurt is when they went from 6-0 and they started to stink. He was a wide receiver then, but he's become an important player for them. Number four, this one's not so good, Chris. Aaron Rodgers, quarterback rating. You set the line at 86.
Ooh!
I took the over, which Go ahead. Was correct. Mm-hmm. You were off by around 70 points. His rating was 150.8. So tough line on that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure that you were expecting 150.8.
I said the over.
I know you did, but I somehow think you were thinking maybe more 90 maybe as opposed to 150.
Maybe. Number five, how many rushing yards would Seattle have? I thought they have a pretty big game. You set the line at 127.
Ooh, nice.
They had 150.8? Is that...
150.8 was Aaron Rodgers' passer rating.
I'm sorry.
They had 136 yards on the ground.
I'm sorry. 130. I just said it, and it's getting late in the night. 136. The over was correct. I got that one correct. Number of personal fouls.
But said, come on now. I was wanting to know how close that was. I was 9 yards off, okay?
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Number of personal fouls. You set the line at.
There was a lot of them, yeah.
2.5. Mike counted 5. There are 5 personal fouls. That's a good good line. I took the under. That was incorrect. 5 was the over. I'll learn better next time.
Yeah, that was more – I mean, I did not anticipate how chippy that game would be. And it was – I just wondered the next time these teams play, if they have Jeff Triplett's crew doing the game, there's going to be a dozen personal fouls.
Probably right. Number 7, how many interceptions would Seattle have off of Rodgers or – Green Bay passers, you set the line at 1.5, and we had no interceptions. I thought,
wow, yeah,
their
bad
secondary,
bad
was,
line there. Yeah,
yep. The tiebreaker was Green Bay total passing attempts. We had, I said 35, you said 35.5. They had 25 attempts, so they did rush the
really
ball.
Really surprising. It was they ran it more than they passed it. And as it turned out, they didn't even have 60 offensive plays. And I think it might be because they were getting the ball so often on interceptions, they had short fields a lot of the game.
Yeah, and they had the bomb, so it took a lot of yardage off the table. So a lot less than we had expected. And then the 8.5, this sort of extra credit one, it was will you hear boos as a result. I said yes. I was not the only one to say yes. There were others who thought there was going to be boo birds out there. Someone said boo Richard Sherman, which doesn't count. I think we could count it to say that there was no boos. When McCarthy ran the ball 3 times and we punted, there might have been some boos there. I thought maybe I heard some, but I won't count those.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely people. There was a disturbance in the force. You're talking early in the second half when they came out running. Yeah.
Yeah, I was very disappointed about that. So our two winners, Tom Glassell.
Hey!
6.
Welcome back, Chief.
So he is 6, correct. And then a first-timer, Sean. And tell me, can you picture this last name? I'll spell it for you. It's P-F-E-I-L. If you put a P and an H together, that's F. But if you put a P and an F together, that's
well. I think that's I think that's still F, like Pfeiffer. Isn't Pfeiffer spelled that way?
Like Michelle Pfeiffer?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So Sean File. Sean, please
File.
email us at
We're gonna go with file.
Sean, just email us at packerstherapy@yahoo.com and give us a pronunciation. We want to get these things right. They both not only got six correct, but they also picked the tiebreaker points of 38,
Ooh.
which I guess because the only ones that got six. Oh, no, Tom Freeman had six, but he had too high of a tiebreaker. So,
Ooh, Tom.
yep, so yeah, Freemans are back at it. But we have two winners splitting up the Packers Hotel and Casino room. That means we got to get the cleaners out again, so.
I know. Well, it's that. Well, luckily, we do pay. I think we've decided to go with $15 an hour. So our staff is a happy staff at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino on the Strip in Las Vegas, also available in Laughlin, soon coming to Reno. So there'll be all kinds of options for people playing the gambling lines. We will do it again this week against the Bears. What are the gambling lines, Dave?
All right, are you ready?
I am ready.
Number one, how many touchdowns will Aaron Rodgers throw?
Aaron Rodgers had three touchdowns this past week. Going to be playing the Bears, but normally I would probably put that line at 2.5. But given Rodgers' a hamstring injury, which I would hope after a couple weeks is going to be better, but now he's got the calf injury. It's his right leg, right calf. That's the one he's going to, push off of. So
Well,
I
time out.
yes,
So
yep.
the push off, is that really more important than the left? Isn't that just nonsense? I heard that too. That well, that's the leg he pushes off of. Both legs are important. One is where he steps into his throw. The other one is where he steps off of. They're both important.
Dave, have you ever thrown a ball in your life?
Yes, many times.
Okay. And
I need
you're
both
right-handed.
legs.
You
Yes,
are
I'm
right-handed.
right-handed. Yes.
And so think about it now. Imagine it in your head, okay? You
Yeah.
got the ball in your right hand,
Yep.
step with your left,
Step with your left,
and what's your power leg?
and
Then
you
you're
push off with your correct. But
that's right.
if it was his left leg, they'd say, "Well, that's the leg he plants. He can't." It doesn't matter. It's if a bad leg's a bad leg.
Well, no, that much I will agree with you. The point is, I'm not sure he's going to be able to, have his complete arsenal at his game. So I'm going to put the line for touchdown passes at actually at 1.5. I'd normally go 2.5 against the Bears, but I'm going to go 1.5.
All right, I'm taking the over on that one. He threw for five touchdowns and a half one time against the Bears.
Well,
But
true, but
whether it's an issue,
he had two good legs then too.
yeah, I think he easily throws for at least two. Given the success of the backfield for the Packers, how many interceptions will Green Bay have this week?
Okay, oh, so it's not Rodgers throwing them, it's our defensive backfield making plays.
Catching them.
Okay.
Yep.
The quarterback for the Bears, don't they have Barkley? Is he their quarterback
That's
now?
correct. Yeah, Charles
Yeah,
Barkley's
okay.
son.
Well, I think, two pictures side by side might disabuse you of that
Oh,
of that
well,
notion. Yeah.
I don't know
But
science.
this is the guy who was the quarterback for USC, as I recall.
Oh, correct. Yep.
Yeah, and he's not a complete stiff, but I think that the Packer defensive backfield has got some confidence now. They got consistent pass rush against the really crappy offensive line. I don't know if they'll get as much consistent pressure this time. I think Sitton is back too, if I'm not mistaken,
Yeah, I think Alshon Jeffrey
for the
is
Bears.
playing,
Yeah,
but
right. So I'm going to put the I'm going to put that at 1.5.
one half. I'm going to take the over. I think they get one. They get one. Number three, how many plays will they have that's greater than 40 yards? So the one they had this week, they had Devontae Adams for 66.
And that was it, I think.
I think that's it. So,
It was the
the
only play.
Bears. And again, cold weather again, but maybe again, it's just set this at a half, but I'd be curious. So, how many plays greater than 40 yards? They seem to want to throw the ball deep continually. So, let me see what you think. More than 40.
40 yards is a good number because, you know, it's not like the home run 66-yard deal, and but it's the kind of thing where you can, you know, get 44 yards and not score a touchdown. So I'm going to put that actually at 1.5. I think they're going to be – oh, now this doesn't include returns on kicks,
correct,
right?
Correct. This is players' scrimmage.
I'm going to go with 1.5 on
right.
that one.
I'm taking the over on that. I'm completely changing my tune from last week, by the way.
And why not? They're playing a team that they should beat, even though it's on the road.
I agree. Number four, how many total yards will Ty Montgomery have? He had a really good week. He had 86 yards in total, roughly about half rushing, half receiving. How many total yards do you think Ty will get?
Yeah. Now, he did hurt his shoulder in this game. I'm imagining he's going to play, but will he be limited is the question. If he was healthy, I might put that line about what he had last week, but I'm thinking he might be a little bit limited, so I'm going to put that line at 64.
64 yards. I'm going to take the under. I think you're right. I think I'm going to take the under. I just got feeling that one. Number five, I might be running out of ideas here, but what do you think Barkley's quarterback rating will be? It was not unrespectable. He was a 92.2 against the Lions.
Yep.
What do you think? Quarterback rating for Barkley.
Well, you know, Packer defense, for whatever reason, they've been solid. But I think this is actually probably with Jeffrey back, I think they could have a little more options. I'm going to put his quarterback. You said it was 92 this past week?
92, yep.
Yeah, I think I'm going to put that – I'm going to set that at 94.
94.0. All right, I'm going to take the under. Under on that one. I thought this was kind of interesting. I'm curious what you think. The Packers ran the ball, including three from Rodgers, which was for – and two from Hundley. But I'm going to include the quarterback rushes. But they ran 30 times, 25 to running backs, only two to James Starks, one to Jeff Janis, which I didn't get to watch because DirecTV kicked me over to the, I think it was the Tampa Bay game, and because DirecTV, the what you pay for, if it's shown locally, you have to watch the local feed. The local feed said this game's boring. We're flipping you over to Tampa, so I missed the last second half of the fourth quarter. I could have missed the Christian Ringo play.
That would have been a tragedy.
Yes, that would have. So I didn't get a chance to see it. But anyway, 30 carries this week, including quarterbacks. How many total carries do you think Green Bay will have next week?
Okay, now before I get to that, though, I got to talk about the Janis touchdown. Probably the most noteworthy thing about that was, you know, it was the same thing they ran a week or two ago, you know, except this time Janis got into the end zone. And he gets in the end zone, and instead of celebrating, there was a great block. It might have been Devontae Adams, just like, you know, knocked his guy down, kind of pancaked him. And the team had gone over to congratulate him on the block. And Janis is like, well, he does his Lambo leave. It is like no one's celebrating with him because they're all congratulating the guy that made the big block.
That's, you know, awesome.
That was sweet.
I have to find that play because I still haven't seen it, but I heard he was a flash.
Oh yeah,
and it was one of those jet. What do you call that?
Jet screen. Yeah, it's a jet sweep, and
it was jet sweep. Thank you.
But they kind of toss it to him. This is what Rodgers did too, and Huntley did the same thing. It wasn't really a handoff. They kind of just flip it to him.
Yeah.
As he's going by, and I don't know why they do it that way as opposed to handing it to him, but I don't know. It's because maybe that way he doesn't have to slow down or something. I'm not sure, but he was around there quick, and I'm not sure he was touched. It was open, and then again, the really good block, and I think it was Adams that made the block.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Yep.
So the question is, how many rushing attempts without quarterbacks?
With quarterbacks.
30 this week. Boy, weather's going to be a factor. I haven't looked at the Chicago forecast, because if the weather's not going to cooperate. And it was not that bad in Green Bay late in the afternoon on Sunday. It wasn't snowing. It snowed most of the night and into the morning. But, you know, by game time, it was fine. I'm not sure what Chicago's going to have, but it will be December. Let me put the number of rushing attempts at 23.5.
23.5. Wow. It's interesting. I'm going to take the under on this one. All right, number seven is a yes-no. Do you think Brett Hundley will play a single line from single play from line of scrimmage?
Yes.
So you say yes. I'm going to say no. 7.5. Will Christian Ringo get a sack, yes or no?
No!
All right, I'll say no as well. But what? How great will it be if he does? And then 7.75. How many? Who's the leading rusher for the Packers this week?
I'm going to go with Kristen Michael.
Michael? All right. I'm going to go with Montgomery, just to be different.
But you say leading rusher, you mean yardage, not number of attempts.
Yardage, correct.
Yardage, okay.
Yardage. Yeah. And then the tiebreaker will be Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating. You want to take a stab at that one?
I will, but I just want to point out one thing and give you the opportunity to adjust if you like. Remember that Montgomery's got a bad shoulder.
I agree. Okay. I'll stick with it. All right.
I wanted to give you a chance there.
Is he out? He's not out.
Well, no. I think he's going to play, but I think he's going to be limited, and I think that they're going to be careful in how they use him is what I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm
just why, him. Which is why I went with Michael.
Okay. That's probably fair. You'll probably win, but it's just a it's only 7.75. It's not a real one.
Aaron Rodgers' passer rating, and he has been in fuego, as they like to say, or used to say on ESPN. Last three games, been above 100. His passer rating for the season, I think, is now over 100. I think he's at 101 now for the season.
Huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, this guy is, you know, quietly kind of returning to the kind of Aaron Rodgers season that you expect him to have. This week, though, you know, I think he's going to be limited. I think he's going to be limited because of his physical condition. So I think you might see more short passes, which mean that your yards per attempt aren't as good, and that's a big factor in the quarterback rating. And I don't think you'll have as many TDs. I don't think you'll throw a lot of interceptions. Let me put that passer rating. I'm going to put it at 96.
I'm going to put 119.6.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, that's not good.
I'm going to say if he has that kind of passer rating, I think the Packers win comfortably.
I do too. I think they're going to run the ball probably. Did I say how many carries? I said under 23. I wonder if I should change that. I think they're going to win comfortably. I think they're going to. They should run the ball more, but I think they're going to pass the ball a lot. Hopefully, a lot of short passes to Michael and Montgomery, and hopefully they win comfortably. So, a lot has changed in a week, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, just my attitude about it's changed. And again, it's fun to be into it. This is the time of the year now where you start looking, what are the Vikings doing? What are the Lions doing?
Yeah.
You know, you become interested in other teams more so than how your fantasy team is doing. It's because your team, the team that you follow, a lot of their future is going to depend on how these other teams do. And so you're watching them a lot closer. And that just makes it a lot more fun this time of the year. December football, it's just great when your team is relevant and in it. It just makes it a lot more fun to be a football fan.
I agree.
So if I wanted to play these betting lines that we've just given people, how would I go about doing that, Dave?
You would email Mike Miller at his email address, which is MitnoMiller, MitnoMiller at gmail.com, and he will take care of you. Or you could send it to PackersTherapy@yahoo.com, or you could go to our PayPal at PackersTherapy@yahoo.com and give us some money. You can
absolutely do that. I believe that is still open. If people are thinking, there's probably a lot of people listening all season long. They enjoy the podcast, and they're probably thinking, you know, I really should give. It's December. We're getting to be the holiday season. You know, people want to give gifts. They want to give gifts to the people they love. And who's more lovable than Dave and me? You
know? That's right. And in return, you don't just give, you receive. Yeah. You would get the special pod. If you've not heard our special podcast where you learn all about us.
Ooh, yeah.
Every detail of our lives are shared to the open to people for $10. I don't know if anyone who would sell their life story so cheaply as we've done. Through a podcast that is available to you for $10 or more. So that's still out there. We're probably not going to go to another football game because it's way too cold. But I could always use that money.
But we will
like,
we will spend the money though anyway.
On virtual reality games for me, I don't know. Would you buy apps with yours? I don't.
No, I would give mine to you to defray the cost of coming up here for that game.
That's true. Yeah, I'm still in the hole for that.
Yeah, you know, or you know, people could be like, you know, Dr. and Mrs. Or Dr. and Mr. Van Cleef from Seattle. You know, who listened to our very special podcast. I believe they shared a connection on the on their iPhone by flying to Hawaii on vacation.
Yeah.
They each were listening, so they could hear every word of the exciting, super secret special podcast available only to those people who give more than $10 to PackersTherapy@yahoo.com via PayPal. So please do that if you haven't.
Yep, that sounds good.
Let's see. And speaking of Jared and Mrs. Dr. Van Cleef, was in touch with us this week.
They live in Seattle, too, so they're pretty happy.
So this was very, very special. And also got a chance to see Jared's Auntie Julie, who came to my fair city to do a little work thing. So that was kind of an all-in-the-family situation, kind of cool. And let's see, we heard on Twitter this week, boy, a lot of people, including Jameis, in touch with us, Tom, of course, always our correspondent, our man in Ireland, Patrick, in touch. Of course, Richard Durain several times hitting us on Twitter. Rob Gardner, another consistent Twitter guy for us. Hey, our boy CD, who is one of our benevolent overlords here at Packers Talk, he hit us a couple times on Twitter this week. We also had Pastor Kevin also checking in this week, our team chaplain. Thank you very much for being in touch, guys. We do appreciate that. A lot of email, too, this week. And it was very nice to hear from our military attaché, Captain Dave. Checking in. Hadn't heard from him. I think he was despondent, hitting the bottle pretty hard. I think he's at the war college, and I think that's what they do. They study war all day long, and then they drink heavily at night. I'm pretty sure that's what happens there. So we also heard from the real Greg X. I think he was corresponding with you on Twitter,
I think, Dave.
Yeah,
I just looked it up because I wonder if you're going to bring that up. He asked me how I would like my crow.
Oh, man.
We do this on a volunteer basis, and for people to come at us like that, Chris, do you think that's fair?
Yes, I think it's very fair. Greg, thank you for finally calling this guy out. I mean, because it wasn't like me. I only thought 13-point loss.
Can you imagine how good this team would be if they didn't have Ted Thompson? It boggles the mind.
You know, I think you're a worse troll than Bob McGinn. That's what I think.
Probably.
So anyway, we appreciate very much everyone who's written this week, and especially the people on Twitter. It's a lot of fun corresponding with you guys, especially after the game when people are kind of, you know, getting it off their chest and are kind of venting. We really do appreciate that. So thank you all for being in touch. So pop culture time, Dave.
Pop culture. So I have one movie that I watched and one movie I'm looking forward to. I watched the new Jason Bourne movie.
You did? How was it? I saw it. I was at Walgreens this week, and they were selling the DVD at the checkout. Kind of thought, well, if that's a very good sign or a very bad sign. I couldn't decide. So how is that?
So I remember the first Jason Bourne movie, and I thought it was excellent. The second and third, I think they were critically acclaimed, were pretty good. But all I can recall is 2.5 hours of someone walking fast to music. You know, to that, the whole movie is people walking briskly, not trying to be detected, to the soundtrack music that goes on. And I actually recorded a 5-second clip or a 10-second clip of the movie Jason Bourne, and it's more the same. If you like watching people walk briskly through different cities throughout the world, Jason Bourne is the movie for you. But I watched them walk briskly, and then about about 60 to 70 minutes into the movie, I fell asleep. So I was disappointed by it. It was not worth my $5 to pay iTunes to rent it. And I'm a Jason Bourne fan. I really like that first movie. That's kind of a go-to movie for me, and I did not like this one. So,
well, that's interesting because I've been meaning to see that. I almost, as an impulse item, I almost picked up the DVD at Walgreens, where I go for all my movies, Dave.
Well, if you like 2 and 3, then
those three movies, that trilogy, I thought was brilliant start to finish. I love the first movie. I liked the third movie quite a bit. Second movie was okay.
Okay.
So the three of them, though, together, I mean, I would spend an evening, a snowy winter evening, watching those back to back to back. I think those are great movies.
This is part four. I mean, it's him walking with a backpack with that music, you know, going over and over and over again.
It's by John Powell.
Yeah. So it's that. Yes. Yeah. It's the same. It's he's walking away from somebody else, this movie. But I fell asleep. It doesn't help that I watch it late on a Friday night. But what I'm really looking forward to, I have two tickets, Friday night, 7:30, Star Wars Rogue One. I'm going to be there watching that movie. I'm so excited for this movie. I think it's going to be great. It's so great that it's going to be my pop culture for 2 weeks in a row. Just the anticipation of Star Wars. I am over the top Star Wars fan.
Oh my God.
Darth Vader is in it. More Death Star is in it. I got a ninja, I think, in it. It's going to be great. And the last thing I had is I wanted to – it was not really a pop culture, but it's the way that I watched the Packer game this week. What I did was I worked out during the Packer game. And if someone wants my workout, how I did it, I will send it to them. And this is how I did it. It's kind of a cool way to do it. Is I have an elliptical in front of the TV, so I guess that may not make it that practical for people. But when the Packers had the ball, I had a certain elliptical routine that I would do. When the Packers were on defense, I had a different elliptical process that I would do. And then during the commercials, I would do some kind of routine, like sit-ups, push-ups, lunges, squats, or something like that.
That's impressive.
So what was amazing, which is, I think, interesting for the podcast, if, you know, normally I'd watch a Packer game, I would sit and eat. Here, because there's so much angst when I watch Packer games, that if I work out at the same time, I don't notice I'm doing it because I'm so involved in the game. I literally, Chris, I worked out for 2.5 hours.
Oh my gosh.
I was on the elliptical and would just go. And then during commercials, I would do a series of different things. If someone is interested in doing something like that, let me know at PackersTherapy@yahoo.com and I'll send it to you. But I did that, and that is now going to be my routine when I watch Packer games. It's a great – not only am I not eating, but I'm working out. By the time I was done, I was completely exhausted, as I would be emotionally. This time I was emotionally and physically, and it probably is better that way. So.
Wow. I am impressed.
I will send it to you. It was amazing because I realized, like, oh my gosh, I've been doing this for 2.5 hours, but I didn't notice it because I tell you, watching the Packers completely takes over all my consciousness. I mean, I'm just so into the game that I don't notice I'm doing it. So yeah, that's my new thing. And I'm gonna keep doing it.
Well, good for you. I think that's great. I hit the treadmill after the game. And I, you know, kind of get myself right after the game. And yep. So I don't do it during the game though. During the game, I'm just locked in, you know, me and my son are watching the game and analyzing what's going on, seeing what Christian Ringo is going to do. If he's going to come in from what sideline will he run in from, you know, that kind of thing.
Christian Ringo is, I'm going to get a Ringo jersey, I think, after that game. That is, I can't stop watching that video. It's so great.
It is absolutely – it's almost as good as Aaron Rodgers going in that tent, you know.
Yes, that's right. The poop tent, is that what you call it?
Exactly. Exactly what it's called, yeah. My pop culture is going to be just brief. I just started watching, Black Mirror. I'll talk more about that some other time. But I was listening to something this week that became kind of, you know, got like an earworm where you just, you know, you can't kind of get rid of it. And it makes sense because it's a genre of music called trip hop. And my younger son, the son that we call Simek here on the podcast, who was good enough to do our Packers Therapy logo. He was the graphic artist who did that for us. He told me about this group called Archive and an album called Controlling Crowds. And it's especially the title track, which is a 10-minute long track. And it is just – it just has stuck with me, and I had to listen to it over and over and over again. That track, the whole album is really, really good and the kind of thing that kind of seizes you and gets inside your body. But especially the title track. The group is Archive. It's a British trip-hop, progressive, alternative, what do you want to call it, group. And the album is called Controlling Crowds. And that particular track, which is 10 minutes long, it's almost like an album by itself, check it out. It's the kind of thing you probably could put on when you're working out because it would really, you know, get you into a groove. In fact, I think all the tracks on the disc seg together. So, you know, you could put that thing on, put the headphones on, and it's like one continuous long piece. And because it is this, you know, this trip hop kind of sound, it does suck you in and draw you in and kind of gets you through a long walk or a workout. Or if you're like working on something on the computer and you want something that is not going to be distracting but is going to kind of suck you into your work, I recommend Archive, their album called Controlling Crowds.
All right, Archive.
Yep.
I'm looking it up right now. I've never actually heard the phrase trip hop before.
Well, the only reason I have is because I have a son who's into that kind of electronica.
Yeah.
And, he's an artist, right? He's done our logo. So it's actually pretty cool.
All right.
Again, not for everybody, but it would be the kind of thing that would be really good to have on while you're working out or while you're, you know, you got the headphones on while you're working on something, you're writing something or something at work when you're on the computer.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. So that's going to wrap up this episode of Packers Therapy. Packers win. Very satisfying. I think that's safe to say, Dave, that we were both sated with a 4-touchdown victory over the hated Seattle Seahawks.
Yep.
3 in a row. Packers above 500, 7-6. They don't control their own destiny here. This is a matter they're going to have to rely on Detroit to lose at least one, which seems to be a possibility because they got a couple of tough road games upcoming. So it's still possible here. If the Packers hold up their end of the bargain and they go to Chicago and they win, it gets real interesting at that point, especially if Detroit drops a game or if Minnesota should drop a game. Then we're talking about some real stuff ongoing. It's like every week's like almost like an elimination game.
It's
for the
playoffs,
Packers.
Playoffs started two or three weeks ago. You're right.
And it makes it fun. It makes it fun.
Why not?
So we had fun on this podcast. I think we'll probably have fun again next week. We will be back after the Packers play the Bears. We'll have another podcast for you. But until that time, I'm Chris.
I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy. I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.